Coming up on the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast, Indiana prepares to host the entire NCAA men's basketball tournament. We visit a locally owned retail gem in Northeast Indiana. The Indiana Chamber outlines its legislative priorities. An indie company is playing a role in the COVID vaccine rollout. We spotlight a program fighting racism through the power of sports. And we detail how you can donate your time to causes that need support during the pandemic. Welcome to the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. I'm Andy Ober. Indianapolis has been planning to host its 8th NCAA Men's Basketball Final Four in April. Now Indy, along with Bloomington and West Lafayette, are preparing to make history by hosting the entire 67-game tournament. NCAA Senior Vice President of Basketball Dan Gavitt spoke with Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick about how organizers plan to pull it off.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you as well. It's been a busy, maybe busier than normal, New Year, certainly for you and many people at the NCAA. This was big news. The organization came out several months ago saying the intent was for Indianapolis and Indiana to host the entire tournament. He had a lot of negotiating and a lot of the details that had to be worked out. This is a big undertaking. Indiana uniquely, I think, positioned Indianapolis in particular to host this event. Were other venues, other locations considered?
They were most definitely, but really our focus all along was on Indianapolis and the state of Indiana. Incredible history and tradition for the tournament here, of course, and just incredible relationships with success of having March Madness hosted here so successfully so many times. So while others were considered, the work over the last several weeks to come to Monday's exciting announcement was really focused on Indianapolis.
Dan, give us some perspective at how many moving parts were involved in bringing this deal together. The venues are one thing here in Indianapolis, down in Bloomington, up in West Lafayette as well. But the medical, the health protocols that associated with this tournament in light of the pandemic, how enormous was this undertaking?
Well, it is enormous, no question about it. And, you know, it was a culmination of really months of work going back to the summer and following what other events had been able to do successfully and why they were successful. And that's what led to the basketball committee and staff's decision first in the middle of November to decide to have the tournament in one geographic location to limit travel and all the resultant challenges with travel in the pandemic. And fundamental, of course, to all that decision making was the health and safety of every participant, student athletes, coaches, administrators, as well as the greater community that we would have the event in the greater Indianapolis area. So the medical protocols are really key, of course, fundamental in so many ways. We've worked very carefully and very closely and well with the Marion County Health Department, with Dr. Virginia Kane, with the State Health Department, Dr. Christina Box, and with IU Health as a local partner here and a health provider that can help us to negotiate through this pandemic in a very safe and responsible way. So a lot of detail, still a lot of details, frankly, to work out in the coming weeks and months before March. But many assurances that we needed in order to be able to be confident to make the announcement on Monday.
Dan, the big question that a lot of people want to know is fans. Will fans be permitted to attend the games?
At this point, we have approval only for family members of student athletes and coaches and administrators who will be participating in the games. That's just a limited number that we have assurance that can attend all 67 games. We have hope that there may be fans in attendance, but really that's going to be a mutual decision with the Marion County Health Department, with the NCAA, and it won't be made until probably early February. I think we all agreed that it was important to see how hopefully conditions improve with the spread of COVID-19 and can provide opportunity for a limited number of fans, as we've seen at Colts games, for example. But premature to make that decision right now, and time will tell if that is a possibility or not.
But indeed, that's a decision that ultimately down the road could change potentially from where it is now, but won't be made until early February.
That's correct. Yeah, we're going to take a wait-and-see approach in a very responsible way to make the correct decision.
Dan Gavitt is the Vice President of Basketball at the NCAA. Dan, we appreciate the perspective and all of the hard work that's going into March Madness. I know you indicated at the news conference this will be a very special, a unique event. And I think a lot of people here are confident Indianapolis and Indiana can pull it off. Appreciate you being here, and we'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure, always. Looking forward to an incredibly historic March.
Despite the pandemic, Rose Holman Institute of Technology's Rose Holman Ventures had a record year in 2020. The organization assisted a record 41 clients last year in its mission to help entrepreneurs turn their ideas into game-changing technology. Senior Director Brian Doherty joined us with details.
I've been around long enough. I was there in covering that opening at Rose Holman Ventures, and I can remember Jim Eifert and the former president, Sam Hulbert, Rich Corona, so many people, Tom Mason, involved in that, getting that off the ground, which at the time was certainly an outside-of-the-box idea at Rose.
Yeah, it certainly was. Jim Eifert was quite a visionary in setting this up, and in many ways we're still following a lot of the vision that he painted for us back then. People thought we were a little bit crazy. Nobody thought we could do what we've been doing, let alone do it for 20 years.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that, because I really think the core principles in the Lilly Endowment stepped up with a big grant to help get it off the ground. But the core principles, Rose Holman Ventures, still exist today. Give people who might not know really what the model is at Rose Holman Ventures.
Yeah, so there were a number of things that the Lilly Endowment was interested in seeing us do. And one of those is really still our core operation today, and that's creating an opportunity for students at Rose Holman to have real professional practice experience. And the way we do that is by putting them in a position where they have to act and deliver and perform like a professional. So we have a full-time staff of engineers who work here. This is their core function, to manage these projects and make sure they run right, on time, and under budget. And then each project allows us to hire a number of students from campus to come here and work part-time or full-time as an engineering intern. And that piece of this program has really been pretty consistent over the years. It's gotten much bigger, and we've gotten much better at it. But as the original grant sunsetted, we realized that this part of the operation had legs of its own, and we've continued to do it all this time.
Give us an idea, Brian, because Rose Holman Ventures has worked with so many cool, interesting, innovative companies around the state of Indiana. Zip is an Indianapolis-based manufacturer of lightweight materials for high-performance bicycles, for example. Talk about some of the companies and the experiences these students get.
Yeah, so it ranges a wide number of topics, a wide number of industries, a lot of medical device design through companies like Fast Biomedical and Nico. You mentioned Zip. That was actually a software project for us. You know, people don't think about software bicycles, but the applications that people use to adjust and pick the components that they put on their bicycles so that they're custom to them is software that we did here. We worked with Dow AgroSciences, Eli Lilly on things that are, you know, biochemical and dealing with pest control and things like that. So wide variety of industries. Used to joke that done everything from road grader control systems to brain surgery. That was funny 10 years ago, but 10 years later, it's still true.
Yeah. Very quickly, Brian, Rose Holman, of course, one of America's great engineering institutions. The impact that you've had there over 20 years on the economy, jobs, investment, those types of things?
Well, we've had over 1,350 Rose Holman students come through here as interns in all of these years. And, you know, every one of those people got launched further and faster into their career. They were able to do things more quickly and much more effectively from day one. At the same time, we've worked with over 250 client companies, and every one of those companies had real needs, generally new product development-oriented needs that we were able to meet for them that created wealth-generating opportunities for them as well.
A tremendous success story in Terre Haute, Rose Holman Ventures. Brian Doherty, thanks for joining us. We look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you.
In the small northeastern Indiana town of Fairmount, you'll find a locally owned retail gem called Timber and Thread. The boutique features handmade farmhouse furniture, antiques, and an interesting backstory. Inside Indiana business reporter Mary Rachel Redman has the story in this week's Around Indiana from Grant County.
It all started back in 2016 when Alyssa Ralph was aimlessly browsing Pinterest when she spotted the picture-perfect farmhouse table.
Just looking at the new things out on Pinterest, and I found a plan for a farmhouse table. Thought I could build it.
And build it she did. What happened next? Well, let's just say Ralph had no idea her little hobby would soon turn into a lucrative side hustle.
I posted the first table that I built on Instagram, and people immediately started liking it, commenting, love that, want one, can you make me one? I made a couple more after that. Then a lady approached us about making 8 farmhouse tables for her wedding venue.
With requests quickly piling up, Alyssa knew she needed help. That's when she turned to longtime family friend, Brett Winslow.
I did not think I could do that on my own, so that's when I contacted Brett, and we made a go at it.
I knew she'd built one table. Her pitch was she needed 8 more, and she really didn't have the capacity to do that. So I had the tools and enough space, so we made those 8 tables, and then from there, it's just more orders come in behind more orders.
And since teaming up in 2017, business is booming for the duo, and it has nothing to do with fancy advertising.
We have no Facebook, no Instagram, nothing like that. We do no advertising.
So a lot of it is word of mouth. That's the small town part. That's the small town Fairmount. That's what it does for you. We have people contact us up north, down south. We have one of the very first table that we made was down in North Carolina now. So it's all over.
And you could argue Ralph is making her footprints all over Grant County.
Yes.
She currently works at a veterinarian's office and co-owns a Main Street boutique, all while fitting her furniture gig in weeknights and weekends.
We usually spend 3-4 hours out here a night through the week. On the weekends, if it's a good day, we can do 6-8 hours. I like taking a stack of wood and turning it into something amazing, I guess, at the end. It's amazing what you can do with a 2x4 or a 2x10.
Wow, this is beautiful. And this building used to be what?
The old Fairmount Library.
Currently, we are inside of Tempered Third Company. So talk about what it is that you guys sell here.
From home decor items to women's clothing and jewelry.
So now this is kind of where your businesses converge.
Yes.
So the work
yes.
that you're doing with Brad.
Yes.
Is showcased here.
Yes. Yep. This is where we sell it. We have lots of pieces, handmade, repurposed.
What advice do you have for young women that are looking to maybe get out of the corporate world and kind of do what they love? And I feel like that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Just try it. Don't be afraid to fail. I took a chance on it. I didn't know that it would make it. I didn't think it would. I thought, you know, I might just maybe do this for a year and see how it goes. But that's been going on 3 years now. And so, yeah, I just encourage anyone to just give it a shot. Go for it.
Mary Rachel Redman, Inside Indiana Business.
Indiana lawmakers have begun what is sure to be an active session as they will work out a budget as the pandemic continues. The Indiana Chamber of Commerce has identified its top priorities, including raising the state's cigarette tax and strengthening COVID-19-related legal liability protections for Hoosier businesses. Chamber CEO Kevin Brenniger joined us with more.
Yeah, budget writing session, very important year, obviously, but a very different year because of the pandemic, especially how things play out at the State House. Just a very different setup this year.
Yeah, different logistics. You have the House of Representatives is actually meeting in the state office building south. The Senate is staying in the Senate chambers, but they're putting 30 senators on the Senate floor and 20 more up in the gallery. Committee meetings are taking place where the legislators are in one room and the lobbyists and the advocates and the public are in a different room, and you've got two-way audio and video, lots of plexiglass, and everyone in the State House expected to wear masks.
Kevin, I know budget writing session. I know one of the key bills on the chamber agenda deals with the pandemic, and that's liability for Indiana businesses and organizations, liability related to the pandemic.
Yeah, we are pursuing liability protections for what we think would be frivolous pandemic-related lawsuits. We want to protect businesses, schools, universities, hospitals from lawsuits where, for example, someone comes into your business, and then 2 weeks later they've got they've contracted the virus, and they want to say that I contracted it there, and I'm going to sue you, when in fact no one really knows where the virus was contracted. Fortunately, the legislative leadership has made that a priority at our request. And in fact, Senate Bill 1 was heard midweek this week, and there was a tremendous amount of favorable testimony. They're going to hold that bill because we want to add some protections for product liability for makers of personal protective equipment as well.
Interesting. Another interesting item on your agenda, Kevin, I think, is you'd like to see incentives to help Indiana attract a mobile, remote workforce, if you will, again, coming out of the pandemic.
Yes. As we know, many workers across the state and across the country were sent home to work remotely when the pandemic hit. Our employer surveys tell us that fully 34% of Hoosier businesses expect to continue remote work even after the pandemic is over. And many places are not conducive. You know, if you're in a studio apartment in New York City, that may not be the place you want to spend 24/7. And Indiana is a lower cost, better quality of life state. And we think that we can attract both remote workers and ultimately other people with skills to come and live in Indiana. We want to pursue some incentives to help facilitate that.
One more, we only have about 30 seconds, Kevin, but you do want to see, you would like to see another increase in the cigarette tax. So health, a big agenda item for the chamber.
Yeah, Indiana is now the fourth highest tobacco use state. Our tax rate is 38th lowest. We're lower than all of our surrounding states. There was a direct correlation there. And in order to reduce our smoking rates and reduce the impact of that on businesses and on social services, Medicaid, et cetera, we'd like to see the cigarette tax increased by $2 per pack. That's part of our Alliance for Healthier Indiana agenda. That would also have the added benefit of bringing in several hundred million dollars to the state's revenue coffers, which could help the state balance its budget this year and offset the impact of the pandemic on state revenues.
All right, Kevin Brendinger, president of the Indiana Chamber, thanks for joining us. I know we'll be talking a lot more during this session. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, look forward to talking to you again and providing updates.
Remember, you can catch Inside Indiana Business Television on stations throughout the state every weekend. Head to insideindianabusiness.com to check listings. One of the major concerns in the distribution of the COVID-19 vaccine is maintaining temperature control. Indianapolis-based Langham Logistics is playing an important role by helping healthcare providers secure freezers to store the vaccine. CEO Kathy Langham talked about the company's role in the business of health.
I want to get to these ultra-low temperature freezers because that's an interesting piece of this. But I think it's also interesting, Langham has long been such a key player in the distribution and logistics sector in the state of Indiana. The role you're playing, just in terms of storing and distributing PPE and other equipment and things we hear so much about, there's got to be a place to store it and distribute, and you're playing a big role in that too.
Yeah, thanks for the question. We've got about 9,000 to 10,000 pallets of PPE. So that is masks, it's shields, it's gowns. We have shipped over 5 million pieces to long-term healthcare facilities, to penitentiaries, over a million pieces to small business, half a million to schools around the country, or around the state, I'm sorry, and we continue to do that.
It's an enormous undertaking. I mean, that's what you do and what you do well in your business. But still, a lot of moving parts. Can you characterize for those who aren't familiar with the process, you know, how from a logistical standpoint, how challenging it is?
Yeah, it's challenging. We've shipped to over 1,600 different destinations around the state. We've had over 7,000 shipments with LTL carriers, small package carriers, cargo vans. The team's working 7 days a week, Christmas, holidays, And we're picking orders and just getting them out as quick as we can to serve the state of Indiana and the state health department. And it's a lot of people and a lot of training. We've built portals so people can order online. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes.
Well, a lot going on, too, now that the vaccine is rolling out, in particular the Pfizer vaccine that needs to be stored for shipment and those types of things in ultra-low temperature freezers. Talk about that process, because there aren't a lot of them out there. You're in the process of you're procuring some of the freezers and connecting folks with them. Talk about what's going on in that regard.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. These ultra low temp freezers are pretty high tech, and they go to negative 70 and negative 80 degrees centigrade, which is what we need to do, the temp we need for the efficacy of the Pfizer drugs. So right now the CDC is controlling all the transportation and distribution and sending these to hospitals direct to the front line around the state of Indiana and around the country. A lot of these locations don't have these ULT or ultra low temp freezers. So partnering with great companies like Deem, like Helmer, Indiana-based companies, we procured these ULT freezers and we're placing them and validating and maintaining them around the state of Indiana. And we'll continue to do that, working with the hospitals as well as labs and healthcare facilities.
Yeah, you mentioned those healthcare facilities, but also a number of companies you mentioned. You know, it strikes me that this this effort, if you will, is another great example of Indiana companies in the business sector, private sector, community, pulling together and really getting behind this effort.
I think it is. It's been exciting. It's energizing for all of our employees and working with the big guys, too, you know, with the Lillies, of course, and Roche and Cummins. And it just seems like typical Hoosier companies pulling together to help Hoosiers. It's worked really well, and it's exciting for all of us.
Indiana, of course, the crossroads of America, a great distribution and logistics sector. And with things like the massive FedEx hub that is here, a number of the other assets as well. So Indiana, because of its geographic location, its expertise and what is here, maybe playing a bit of maybe a little bigger role in this vaccine rollout than would otherwise be noted.
I think we do. And like you said, FedEx, their second largest hub is here. They and UPS are doing a lot of the distribution. I think as the vaccines are normalized across the state and 6 months from now, the CDC will open it up to use companies like Langham Warehousing and transportation companies to do the ongoing delivery of the vaccines. And we're located in the crossroads of America, so it's perfect for Indiana.
Well, certainly a lot going on. Langham Logistics President and CEO Kathy Langham, thanks for joining us. Thanks for all you do as well in so many ways in a lot of areas in our state. Appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
Okay. Thanks, Gary.
PNC Grow Up Great is a $500 million multi-year bilingual initiative that began in 2004 to help prepare children from birth to age 5 for success in school and life. To date, the program has served nearly 7 million children. PNC Bank Central and Southern Indiana Regional President Connie Bond Stewart and Early Learning Indiana CEO Maureen Weber detail the initiative in our Eye on Education segment.
Maureen, I'll start with you. Just, you know, we have done a number of stories on this show. This is early learning is such an issue that has really come to the fore in the business community, not just here in Central Indiana, but all over the state of Indiana. As you look at the state of early learning in Indiana, how would you characterize it?
Yeah, well, it's certainly in flux over the last 12 months, given where we are with the pandemic. You know, in the very best of times, we typically talk about three challenges that we have around early ed, really starting with the ability to access. And in many communities across the state, it's a challenge still just to find a seat of early learning opportunity. The second challenge that we see, and this is really statewide, is the ability to ensure that those seats are, in fact, high quality. And delivering the social, emotional, the literacy and math learning outcomes that we really require of them. And then last, that we have opportunities that families can afford. And we know that it's a challenge for families. And certainly the pandemic has made all three of those fronts more challenging for us.
Connie, PNC, as mentioned, has early learning as a real focus area of the bank's philanthropy and contribution to community. You've been obviously a big leader here in Indiana. Why has this become such an important issue, in particular for the business community?
Well, the reason we got involved was originally due to research which showed that if a child had the opportunity to high-quality early childhood education, they were much more likely to enter school ready to learn and to be successful ultimately, not only in school, but in their future career. And that is particularly true of disadvantaged children. It's their way out. And so we felt this was an imperative that every child should have an opportunity for a future that's bright. And subsequently, the research has shown that not only does it benefit the child, and we did a study in Indiana several years ago that showed the return on investment can be at least four times the initial investment made. So it's hard to beat that kind of return. But also it impacts the families in a big way. If the parent knows that their child is in a good, safe learning environment, that frees up that parent to go back into the workforce or further their own education so they can better support their family. And this is becoming even more critical because the need is great for skilled workers. So, yes, you know, this is just a wonderful solution all the way around.
Connie, funding obviously is important to this initiative. You'll be going back to the Indiana State House in this budget writing session. What are you going to be asking for? What's on the key agenda when it comes to early learning in Indiana and that ask at the Indiana General Assembly?
Well, you know, I'd like to start by first thanking all of our partners in the community because everybody is pitching in to help address this. So the private sector is continuing to invest. PNC ourselves through our foundation this year has invested more money than I can ever remember in the state of Indiana, not only on early ed, but also on other COVID-related issues. Throughout the state, we've invested in 2020 over $1.6 million. So we've seen that also, you know, from philanthropy with Lilly Endowment, Fairbanks, and others. And our partners, United Way and Early Learning, are working hard to deliver the services where they're most needed. So we need that partner also in the state, which has been a fantastic partner historically. And so at a minimum, we want to not only maintain the support, but we'd like to slightly grow it too. So there are 18,000 children in poverty that would qualify for the state pre-K program. Historically, we've served most recently about 4,100. And so we're asking for only a 10% increase in the number of children served from 4,100 to 4,500 in the coming year.
All right, Maureen, only have about 30 seconds left, but as you look at this year with the pandemic that continues and all the other factors at play, this is a critical year in your view for that momentum to continue when it comes to early learning statewide here in Indiana?
That's exactly right. You know, I think our challenge is to make sure that we're addressing that immediate need and getting children back enrolled in high quality early learning settings just as quickly and safely as possible, while at the same time planning for our long-term future and making sure that we are connecting with partners, as Connie said. PNC has been a great one to us, thinking about how we really address the overall issue of access, quality, and affordability of early learning.
Early learning, a big issue in the business community, to be sure. It will be front and center at the Indiana State House. Maureen Weber, Early Learning Indiana President, and CEO Connie Bond Stewart, also Regional President for Central and Southern Indiana at PNC Bank. Thank you both for joining us. I know we'll talk to you again before the session's over.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Indianapolis-based Group 1001 is upping its game to fight racism through the power of sports. The insurance holding company has pledged $2 million to the nonprofit RISE to drive social change through athletics and education. Group 1001 Senior Vice President Melissa Jacobs talked about the partnership with Bill Benner on Inside Indiana Sports.
Well, give us an overview. First of all, RISE, a national nonprofit, kind of give us the background on their mission.
Yes, just as you said, RISE stands for the RAS Initiative in Sport for Equality. And as you said, a national nonprofit with really a focus on educating and empowering the sports community. So They inspire sports leaders to create positive change on matters of race and equality, and they provide programs and platforms to build skills and to create safe spaces for conversation and learning, and to really educate and hopefully eliminate racism in sports.
And Melissa, talk about how this Group 1001, I know your CEO, Dan Towers, is on the board of RISE. So talk about how this partnership came together with Group 1001 and RISE.
Absolutely. The RISE board is full of outstanding sports leaders, many high-level CEOs, Paul Tagliabue, big names in sports, Mark Emmert here from NCAA right here in Indianapolis, and Dan, as you mentioned. So as some of the tensions started to take place this summer, our CEO, Dan Towers, stepped up with a $2 million pledge to RISE and said, let's do something about it. RISE was really looking at expanding some of their programming into key cities around the United States, and Indianapolis being one of those. And there's no better time to do that, especially. So that $2 million will go to support various programs in Indianapolis when we're in such a year that if we're able to, due to restrictions with COVID, host these major marquee events. And now that we know that the NCAA will host its entire tournament here in the Indy metro area, it provides an even bigger platform for us to use to share that message for what RISE looks to do.
Yeah, and again, you told me beforehand that RISE actually identified in what better sports city, with such a plethora of organizations, the NCAA and others located here. So it was kind of a natural fit.
Exactly. When we look at what Indianapolis and the metro area has to offer for sports, NCAA, Indiana Sports Corp, Pacers, Colts, Fever, you name it, the list goes on. And the energy that I think that we bring to the city through sports really provides that platform for doing those key conversations in the community so that we can educate and empower sports leaders to drive change in their own organizations. And everybody can always do better. I think our sports organizations do a fine job, but as we know, we can always look at ourselves and within and do a better job through education and learning and taking that initiative and that intentional approach to drive social change.
And I know that you've already had some activity with Ball State University, Butler University. You've held community conversations with them, so a lot of this is some of this has already taken place.
It has. We started with a town hall with our own employees. More than 600 employees of Group 1001 across the United States came together a few months ago and really started talking about what is really key in our own organization. Just as you said, we think we have a great culture, but we know that we can always do better. And we look internally, we've been educating our staff. We've had 3 sessions so far with the RISE team and then implemented some programming, just as you said, as Ball State and at Butler as well with their Be United program, of hosting some of those key community conversations on campus.
We got less than a minute left. Gainbridge is one of the Group 1001 companies, and of course, Gainbridge also the major sponsor of the Indianapolis 500. So the possibility exists for some synergy and activity there, right?
There are possibilities. As you look at the largest sporting event in the world being right here in our own backyard, the Indianapolis 500, and looking at that, as an opportunity to drive social change as well, whether it's through the athletes of the sport or whether it's through our fans that attend. Either way, we look to these major sporting events right here in our own backyard to share that message.
Well, Melissa, we certainly appreciate you coming on the program and the exciting activity and what a great, great initiative that Group 1001 and RISE have chosen to be partners in. And we wish you the best going forward. Great to see you again.
Thank you. Good to see you too, Bill.
And finally this week, even though we're still in a pandemic, nonprofits and service organizations still need volunteers to help carry out their missions. January 18th is a National Day of Service that celebrates Martin Luther King Jr.'s life and legacy. United Way of Central Indiana Senior Director of Communications Jessica DeSanto has ways you can help.
I want to talk about a unique website in a virtual way, a one-stop shop, if you will. But give us some perspective in the nonprofit world. Everyone is impacted in some way. by the pandemic, but I think it's accurate to say that nonprofits really are feeling the impact, certainly, of COVID-19.
They certainly are. Majority are working some of the hardest work they've ever had, serving our community who is in desperate need of their basic needs to survive: food, transportation, medical supplies, safe housing. Not only is the need has the need risen so much, but the ability to serve people without a volunteer force, as was usual, is a really big issue. So nonprofits really need a new and creative way to invigorate a volunteer force that it looks very different now, because we can't be in person for a lot of volunteer opportunities that we used to be able to take part in on a day like Martin Luther King Day.
And a new and creative way of doing that is volunteercentralindiana.org. It's a one-stop shop to connect with nonprofits. And actually, Jessica, this is something that was created a year ago. So this was actually pre-pandemic.
It sure was. With the Indy Chamber, United Way of Central Indiana partnered to create this one portal, because so many of our organizations have, and people have been interested in trying to find volunteer opportunities for themselves as well as their families. And we really needed a place for a hub, if you will, for one place for these opportunities to live. And we did it right before the pandemic, and it really became more essential than ever at that point, because as people wanted to volunteer during the pandemic and still do, they now have a place to go. So we're really proud of the site. We're really proud that agencies can easily get their opportunities uploaded and people can search them easily and find the right opportunity for them, either virtually or in person.
A lot of different opportunities. Give us an idea, Jessica, if you would, about some of the opportunities that are out there and how people can connect and impact some of these nonprofits.
Sure. You know, community centers. Think about Faye Bacard Community Center on the South Side. They need right now, and they've posted on volunteercentralindiana.org, they need help with pantry food distribution and restocking. If you want an in-person opportunity, Horizon House needs kitchen volunteers, just simple cleanup and service to our homeless residents. Or if you're a family that wants to stay home and do something from home, Big Brothers Big Sisters, they need activity kits that the big brother and the big sister can do with their little brother or little sister online. Something fun that keeps the connection alive if they can't be together. So these are the kinds of varieties of opportunities that you can see on this website. And I encourage people to check it out, because, again, it services anything from agencies of community centers, childcare centers. The geographic span is all across our Central Indiana community. So you can probably link up to something close to you, or you can do something virtually. It's all right there.
All right. Volunteercentralindiana.org is the one-stop shop to connect with nonprofits in the spotlight, January 18, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Jessica DeSanto from the United Way of Central Indiana. Thanks very much, Jessica. We look forward to talking to you soon.
Take care. Thanks, Gary.
That wraps up this week's Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. Remember, you can find all of this week's TV segments, as well as the top business news from throughout the state, at insideindianabusiness.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our platform of free e-newsletters. This is Andy Ober for Inside Indiana Business.